The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Well, we're big rock singers. We got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go. We sing about beauty and we sing about truth at $10,000 a show. We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills, but the thrill we've never known is the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
It's not the Rolling Stone, for crying out loud. Finally, we're getting a little respect around here.
And it's not really even your picture.
No. This has been so hilarious. So, if you've been listening to the show all week, was it just Wednesday?
Yeah.
That was just on Wednesday.
It's been a long 3 days.
So Wednesday's when we got the tip that somebody had towed a trailer in front of Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold's house. I don't know if you know this about her. She's the grandma with the nose ring. Cool. Edgy. So thinking it was an abandoned trailer, one of my knucklehead listeners went and painted Dory for governor and vote Dory. So if you haven't seen this morning's Seattle Times, I bought a hard copy for the first time in decades. Okay, we can bring the music now. I've had enough of Dr. Hook. that was the first time in decades I bought a hard copy, because we're above the fold on the front page, and it's the couple that owns the trailer that were in the studio with me yesterday. And we had a lot of fun with them in here. And they thought the whole thing was hilarious, and we gave them enough. We gave them money to clean it off, and they were just taking it with great spirits. So Lisa Herbold, this is the best part of the story. If you haven't heard, Lisa Herbold, who owns the home, but according to almost everybody, she's a carpetbagger, Seattle City Council member who lives in North Bend. But Lisa Herbold, trying to save face in this whole debacle, she told the couple that they could park it in her driveway, and they haven't cleaned the graffiti off it yet. So if you see the picture that's on the front page of the Times, it's the young couple, and they're talking to Lisa Herbold, and the trailer is right behind Herbold. It's also, is it still on the Times website?
Yes.
It's still their lead story on SaleTimes.com. And the picture...
It's not the photo up right now.
Oh, it's not. Okay, well, click on the story. So the picture just perfectly frames on either side of Lisa Herbold, Dory for Gov and Vote Dory. So the fact that that is sitting in Lisa Herbold's driveway now is just as amusing as it can be to me, especially since the owners of the trailer seem to love it so much, too. So anyway, thank you. Took a while to get on the cover of the Seattle Times, I'm telling you, but... I appreciate the nice photo that they put in the paper
and
today.
A pretty fair read.
It was. And the other thing is, since so many people are trying to completely mischaracterize this, it was also very cool in the Seattle Times comments that every time somebody said something inaccurate about our show and our role in this, I assume our listeners were just very quick to correct them, and it was really nice.
I wish there were more of our listeners on Twitter.
Oh, screw
that. But never mind Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. So I do appreciate the people who have, and I'm sure that many of our listeners are among the comments in the paper. And yeah, if you want to go elsewhere on social, you can. But but yeah, it's just been really amusing. Okay, with that as mere prelude, let's get to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
I've said it so many times. Local officials once again have blood on their hands. Once again, we're seeing our sanctuary policy directly attributable to the deaths of local people. And To help walk us through this story, Brian Wilcox, he is the ICE Deputy Field Office Director. Brian, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Dory, for having me on.
Let's go through. I just find this absolutely mind-boggling, Brian. So in April, an 18-year-old was shot to death at a park in Bellevue. It was the first murder in Bellevue in ages, I know.
Right.
And you now have some information about one of the suspects in that murder. Tell me about Carlos Daniel Carrillo Lopez.
Okay, well, Carlos Carrillo Lopez, he was encountered back in April of 2015 by the Border Patrol. At the time, he was a juvenile, and he was released to a sponsor initially in the state of Texas, but eventually found his way up to the state of Washington. And he has basically been here since 2015.
Okay.
And, you know, by all accounts, he's been involved in, you know, significant criminal activity.
And do you know the nature of the crimes that he's been in the system for before this alleged murder?
Well, I don't have that in front of me.
Okay.
I know that he's just been arrested on numerous occasions, and we haven't been notified of his arrest on a number of different occasions before he became notorious recently.
And in fact, one of those occasions when he was in custody for a different crime was about 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks before this murder. 3 weeks. On March 15th, he was in the system. You guys put in a detainer on him, and because of county sanctuary policy, ICE was not notified that they had him, correct?
Yes, that is correct. He was booked into the South Correctional Entity, which is called SCORE in Burien.
Right.
And we did put a detainer on him on that time, but he was released without notification to us.
Okay, and if that detainer had been honored, if they had just called you a day ahead of his release, would you have begun deportation proceedings?
Well, yes, he was in deportation proceedings because he was caught by the Border Patrol. And so we would have, if SCORE had called us, we would have gone and picked him up. We would have detained him. We would have looked at his criminal activity up until that time and determined if he was a continued risk
right.
to the public, and we might have detained him. We'd have to weigh all of those considerations, but definitely he would have come into our custody, and we would have gone from there.
Okay, so instead of contacting you, they released him without notification to ICE, and 3 weeks later, on April 4th, he is accused now of being involved in the murder of this 18-year-old in the Bellevue Park. So can you say with certainty that he would not have been a part of that murder if they had simply honored the detainer and called you 3 weeks earlier?
Well, I'd say there's a likelihood that he would have been detained by us. But again, at the initial time that we put a detainer on him in March, his criminality might not have been sufficient enough for us to decide that he warranted continued detention.
Okay. All right. Got it. And then there is another story, another murder where somebody who is here illegally is accused. And that one was, tell me about that. This is because they plucked the body of a 16-year-old out of the Green River in Auburn. They've arrested two men for his brutal murder. And one of those guys also is somebody you knew about at ICE, right?
Yes, we did.
Tell me about Carlos Orlando Irajeta Vega.
Carlos Irajeta Vega is, he came to the United States as a juvenile. He's from El Salvador. He came, he was encountered by the Border Patrol in September of 2016, an unaccompanied child, and he was turned over to the Office of Refugee Resettlement by law. They're the ones that handle unaccompanied juveniles, And ultimately, they located his father here in Washington, and they released him to his father's custody. So he came up to the state of Washington and has been here since early 2017.
Okay. And again, once he got here, several arrests between 2017 and 2019, right?
Right. That is correct.
You had filed many detainers on him November of 2018. Again, he was arrested 5 days after that release. He was arrested again in Tuscora. You again put in a detainer. August of 2019, arrested by the Burien police. Again, that was for a DUI and other charges. They released him before you could encounter him. And so now he is a suspect in the murder of the 16-year-old child down there, right?
That is correct. And we had initially, back in November of 2018, he was arrested by the Kent Police Department and booked into the King County Jail. And we lodged a detainer with King County on that case, and they released him without notifying us. And then, yeah, subsequently, as you described, in November of 2018, and August of 2019, he was in, again, the South Correctional Entity jail in Des Moines, actually, Washington.
Okay.
And they ignored the detainers and released him.
So because of sanctuary policy, they will never work with you at ICE. And when the people who could have been detained by ICE are involved in murders, I truly think that, you know, while the perp is obviously the main person responsible for these crimes, but I think it's an inescapable fact that our policies also contribute to these crimes.
Oh, absolutely. And again, there are times we can't always say people are arrested for crimes that ultimately, of course, they're found not guilty of, or there's an escalation in their criminality. So earlier in the process, if they come into ICE custody, we may have to make our own custody determinations. But absent a lot of, you know, sympathetic factors and other issues that we become aware of, the likelihood is if you're released into the community in the United States while you're going through immigration proceedings and you subsequently start to commit crimes, you know, we're generally going to be considering you a danger to the community, and also you're not complying with the terms of release by the Department of Homeland Security. So,
sure,
we would like to get them into our custody and make these determinations. And part of the sanctuary policies that we're facing right now is not just a matter of the detainer, but it's a matter of not having access to these individuals while they're being detained.
Right. Yeah.
And so we can, if we had that access, as we had in the past, we would be able to get into the jails and talk to these individuals, and we would also be able to identify folks that are in the jails and determine their alienage, because in both of these cases, there are other individuals involved that we have some knowledge of, but not definitive knowledge regarding their immigration.
Right. No, I get that. And Dal Constantine, he who is the primary pusher of sanctuary here in King County, he said something absolutely bizarre and baffling to me, Brian. He said that ICE is seeking to sow fear and division for political gain. And then he said, studies show no correlation between undocumented immigrants and violent crime. I don't know how he can say that when we have two stories. And he said it in response to these two murders. There is a clear correlation between illegals and murders in these two stories in his county. How he can say that is just baffling to me.
Well, I can only agree with you.
I understand. Brian, I really appreciate you coming on with me, illustrating this problem for all of my listeners, and I hope it doesn't fall on deaf ears with our politicians or with our voters who could change these politicians. Brian, thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.
Brian Wilcox, he is the ICE Deputy Field Office Director. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable that our politicians are so zealous about policies that are, you know, directly tied now to the death of an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old here in King County. Unbelievable. And, you know, as always, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And I'll say something else. I want to apologize to King County Executive Dow Constantine, who is the main architect of this sanctuary policy in our county. I want to apologize because I went after Dow Constantine really hard for using sheriff's deputies as his personal Uber so he could go out drinking most nights. And now I understand why Dow Constantine has to drink every evening or most evenings. Because if you are the architect of a policy that is directly tied to the murder of a 16-year-old, directly tied to the murder of an 18-year-old, you got to be fighting some demons that you have decided to put politics above human life. I think I'm starting to understand why Dow Constantine has to have sheriff's personnel take him to bars. Because I don't know. I just do not understand how somebody like him with these policies can live with himself. And that is your big lead.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, Ursula's going to check the news, and then let's lighten things up a little bit. I haven't had a chance to talk to Pete Carroll since that exhilarating Thursday night game 8 days ago against the Rams. We'll preview Sunday's Cleveland game, the Pete Carroll Show, next on the Dory Monson Show.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
All right, here we go now, here we go now, here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is brought to you by Pizza Hut and the Pro Club. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Friday and the Seahawks are on a roll. The players got a couple of extra days off before they leave for Cleveland and take on the Browns on Sunday. And Coach Pete Carroll joins us as he does every game weekend Friday. Coach, great to talk to you again.
What's up, Dory? Good to talk to you too.
You know, that win over the Rams, and it seems like a million years ago already.
I mean, gosh, it's true, doesn't it? It seems like it was so long ago.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But,
already history.
But there were a couple of things out of that, Pete, that I had to talk to you about as we get rolling into this today. And one is just, I know everybody's been discussing Russell Wilson and his best season ever. I assume you agree with that assessment thus far.
Well, he's just getting started. You know, we're just getting underway, but it's his best start. And you know, he's got a long ways to go. We all have a long ways to go to see what the story is for this year. But he hasn't been able to start any better than this in any of his great years that he's had. So we're all excited for him. But he's just cruising, playing football, and having fun doing it and doing great.
And I saw one stat, 12 touchdowns, zero interceptions in five games. No quarterback's done that since 1950. That seems crazy.
I like that kind of stuff. There you go.
I'm sure you do. And the one throw to Tyler Lockett, I mean, I said at halftime, as we went into our halftime coverage, that everybody was raving about Tyler's catch. Pete, I think that's the best throw I have ever seen in my entire life.
It was perfect. You know, I don't know how you could do one better. It was a perfect throw for the moment and the opportunity and the space and all that. And it took a perfect catch to match it, which both those guys are capable of, obviously. But it was. I think the amazing thing about it is to see the spacing that was available. And to say, I can get this, I can do this, you know, and he let it go, and sure enough, it was perfect.
Yeah, it was. In fact, I did a little calculating, Pete. I figure that you have, as a head coach, watched 26,640 passes from the sideline, and I'm thinking that might have been the best one of all.
It was perfect. You can't, I mean, there's been some great ones over the years, but that one was exactly, and it was maybe the degree of difficulty might have been as hard as you could make it too. He had
right.
a guy in his face and he's running to his left and he's already kind of away from the line of scrimmage. And, it was a beautiful thing to see.
So that leads into something I wanted to talk with you about. So Russell afterwards, he talked about playing baseball was helpful to him in that, in, you know, turning double plays in the Yankees minor league system with Didi Gregorius. And you know, I was watching how he got his hips and his shoulders squared up, even though he was sprinting hard left. And I know that you're a big advocate for youth sports. And every guy I know who played in the NFL, Pete, and I know quite a few of them, they played multiple sports. And Russell was talking about the benefit of that. And I see so many adults who try to steer kids into specialization, and I just wanted to get your take on all that.
Well, yeah, you came to somebody that's on the real extreme end of this spectrum here, because I just don't think that there's any time in a young kid's life that they should be restricted from playing, and particularly if you're pointing them towards the future that is out there somewhere, that they go for college or for pros or whatever. I don't see it. You know, I know that I'm probably, you know, I'm a dinosaur on this one, but I think kids should play everything they could possibly play for as long as they can, you know, and then because someday you don't get to play anymore.
Yeah.
And so I want them to get every experience. But to go beyond that and reasons why, I think that the all of the millions of little calculations that you make in all the different sports to, you know, to access the game and the what's called for and all that kind of stuff, all adds to your overall ability to play every game. It all kind of crosses over and where it intertwines in a way that that makes you better, you know, and it makes you more aware, and it, timing and feel and sense and awareness and space and all those kinds of things that come into play when you play all the games. There's just so much to it, and I do think that there's some things that are maybe harder. Maybe hitting a baseball is the hardest thing against guys that throw really fast, but playing quarterback, you need to play everything. You need every sport that, you know, coach once told me to throw a seam route down the middle between two deep coverage safeties trying to play. It takes everything you've ever done in sports ever to make the calculations and the read and the sense to do what you got to do. So Russ, I know, is a big advocate, you know. Now, of course, I played a bunch of sports. I played three, and he's played three in sports art his whole life. And that's, we all just feel like that was instrumental in everything. So
yeah.
Please don't discourage the kids from playing other sports because you're trying to make them a star or something. You know, let them just keep on playing, and it'll help them. And let them have the experience of a lifetime to keep playing games of all of a great variety.
When you say you're at the extreme end of the spectrum, I'm right there with you, and I'll go even further. I think the adults who try to make a living off of dragging kids into specialization, I think it's so misguided, and they just have a sales pitch for the parents all too often. So I'm glad
hear one more thing about that, Dory. That, you know, I don't know, and you know, I hear you about the parents trying to make something off it, but I look at it like the parents want everything for their kids, and they want them to have, you know, as much as they can possibly get in their lifetime experience and all that. And so that's why they'll specialize them, you know, because they want them to use the benefit of the focus and all that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, it's the kid's life. You know, it's the kids that's living the life, and let them live it to the fullest. And even if you've got those ideas, you know, you can talk about it. Maybe the kid makes those choices, but let the kids choose on these things and let them figure it out. Let them follow the fun. And I think that's the way it should go.
Amen, brother. Okay. Speaking of fun, I don't know if you're going to remember this, but about 5 years ago, I shared with you one of my favorite quotes, and it was from Sartre. And you showed off by telling me that you knew his first names. Remember that?
Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
Jean-Paul Sartre.
Jean-Paul.
Right. When he said, the greatest glimpse to a man's soul is how he answers the question, this is what I was doing when I felt the most alive. I thought about that as I watched that field goal go wide right, Pete, and they showed you sprinting like a little kid down the sideline. That was so fantastic. And I was also thinking, what a great blessing for anybody at any age. But, you know, you've won national championships, you've won Super Bowls, and to have moments that are that exhilarating, it was just really cool and fun to watch.
Well, I'm just living right along with them. I'm trying to have as much fun as the guys can have, too. And that was a great moment for us, because we wanted to win that game so bad, and we wanted to do it, and we almost gave them a chance. You know, they had their opportunity, but we almost gave them the chance away, in which we were right at the precipice of it, and fortunately, you know, they weren't able to convert, and so we win. You know, I don't know if it's a whole lot different than the catch that we made, you know, against the Packers, or the catch we made against the Patriots, against the Packers again, the catch we made against the Patriots that day in the rain. You know, those kinds of plays and those moments when Sherm tips that ball away, you know, in the corner of the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, Marshawn scores the touchdown against the Saints. You know, those kinds of moments are just, we're so fortunate that we get to be in a world that, where we get to enjoy those things, you know, so why not freaking live it up?
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, too many people go through life on a flat line, and, you know, a moment like that, it lifted up 70,000 people who were there and the, you know, millions who were watching. And I just thought, yeah, that's one of the moments. That's one of the moments that just makes you realize you're alive. I think that's very cool.
There you go. Okay, John Paul.
Okay, I appreciate it. All right, Pete Carroll, stick around. We are going to continue our conversation with the coach, find out what he's got cooking for the Cleveland Browns Sunday morning in Cleveland, a game you will hear on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. And the Pete Carroll Show will continue as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Pete Carroll is with us, the Pete Carroll Show, and I do want to talk about the upcoming Cleveland Browns game, but one other thing about that Thursday night win against the Rams, and I don't want to dwell on that game. Would you have, as high as you were, as excited as you were, as fired up after the game, would you have been equally as low if that field goal had been 2 feet further left? Because I know how much you hate to lose.
I don't know. I don't have to really think about that, do I?
Well, I mean, I don't even want to try to assess that one, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, I'm just asking because
there's plenty of time to do that when it comes up as it is, okay?
Okay, I'll just move on. Right. Okay, consistency. You were talking about Russell and his consistency. What's the secret for him, for everybody else you're trying to coach up, for everybody who's listening? What are the life lessons you've learned about building consistency?
Well, it begins with preparation. You know, you've got to put the time in that it takes so that you can, you know, perform at a really high level. You have to really work at it to gain the skill so that you can repeat the skill under the pressure of the circumstances and the issues and the challenges, you know. So it's the discipline that comes from the repetitions and the practice so that you prepared really well so that you're there. Then you have to capture what you have accomplished in the preparation so that you trust that you're okay. Yeah, trust that you're okay. I've maybe said it to you before, that's what I think my job is to prove to these guys that they're okay and they've done the work and they're ready and they're capable so that they will believe it. And so that, because until you believe it, until you trust it, then you're going to call on it with, you know, varying degrees of commitment and conviction, you know. If you know you're good, you got it, and you're right, then you have a much better chance of recapturing the what it takes to succeed. And so that's consistency, is being able to recapture what it takes to succeed regardless of what the circumstances are. And that's why it really, just to skip a little bit here, we take so much pride in prime time, you know, and being able to go out there in those situations and perform at a really high level, because that the following and the hype and all the pump and all that that goes up about that, we want to go out there and do like we're capable regardless of that. That's the consistency that I'm seeking with these guys, and so we've got some numbers, you know.
Yep.
We got some stuff that we're proud of there, you know. And I do believe that most importantly, though, is you trust that you're okay and the circumstances will not sway you from your ability to perform. And so that takes discipline and it takes the knowing and that allows you to trust.
One of the areas where you've really built that is on the road. I mean, before you came along, there was this rap about the Seahawks and East Coast road games and all of that. And one of the guys was talking this week about everybody's riding the same bus, that used to have two buses to the stadium, but now all the players are on the same bus. And it sounded like that was a chemistry thing. And I know you told me from our first conversation this season a couple of months ago that you loved the budding, building chemistry on this team. You're, you know, a third of the way into the season now. So give me an update, because you sound like you just love this group.
Yeah, this is a fantastic bunch now, and we've had so much fun, and we're working really hard, and we're learning as we go. You know, there's the lessons just keep on coming, you know, and they're so valuable and so important, so that when it gets down to the end of it, when you can really have experiences to draw from so that you can return to believing and trusting and knowing that you got what it takes. You know, all those, they're all so important. That's why the hard games are so important. The big challenges and the difficult ones on the road, going to Pittsburgh, and we're now here we are going to Cleveland, you know, and playing in a dome, you know, in Arizona. All of those things, they just continue to add up. And if you're fortunate that you can learn from them and keep growing and hopefully, you know, be successful, your confidence elevates and your ability to handle issues and concerns and whatever happens, you become more resilient. And that's a huge, huge plus and the factor that allows you to believe, you know. So that's kind of what's going on right now. The trips in themselves, when we leave on Friday, you know, it's to get us off on the road and get us out there so that we have a chance to have a good, comfortable day the day before the game, and we can all, and it happens that we're all together and all of that. Well, we have taken a step forward, and we have we've zeroed in on the way we get to the game on the morning of and the travel to the game, and it's just to keep us connected. We have a great connection, and I don't want us to get too far apart where we can't really draw on that connection and help each other be strong and be tuned in and focused and all.
Yep. Okay. How healthy are you going into this? I know you had a few guys who were sitting out midweek. So, DJ Fluker.
Yeah, DJ's got a hamstring, and he's, he's going to have a hard time. He wasn't be able to practice this week.
Okay, and then a couple others who I know popped up this week: Ethan Posick and Brandon Jackson.
Yeah. It looks like they're both going to be able to go and be available for us. Ethan made it back and had a good week. Had a good day yesterday. When we had the pads on banging around, and he came back from that. So that pretty much ensured that he would have a chance to play in the game. So we're happy to get him back. He's such a versatile player for us. He really helps us out. And Brandon Jackson made it through on, you know, on the hitting on Thursday. So he was okay today, and he looks like he's available to us if we can get him out there.
All right. And finally, give me just your quick take on the Cleveland Browns. They had a primetime game Monday, and I know that they were incredibly disappointed with how they showed against the 49ers. So what are you seeing?
Well, they came into the year with a big hype and a big, you know, big following and expectations and all, and they had the problem getting started. They've gone back and forth with their wins and losses, and so they haven't quite found it yet. But the reason they had the hype is because they've got a very talented team. They've got a lot of players that can do a lot of good stuff, and they can explode at any time. And hopefully we'll be able to keep them under wraps. The quarterback can do everything. He can move and throw it and make the big throws and the tight windows and all of that. The receivers are phenomenal. The running back is extraordinarily good. So they've got a whole style about them that's ready to go, and they're very aggressive on defense. So, we have to be at our best to go on the road and go get these guys. It's going to take a lot. So we know they're going to bounce back from the Monday night game.
Got it. All right. Well, we're sure looking forward to it. Have a fantastic trip back east, and I will look forward to talking to you again next week, Coach.
Okay, Dwayne, take care.
All right. Coach Pete Carroll joins us every Friday here on the Dory Monson Show, and we will check the news for you, and then the Fastest 15 coming up next here on Dory Monson Show.